G'day, it's Peter, and welcome to Office Anywhere, a podcast about working and living on your terms, whether that's cutting code on the deck of a Balinese villa, crafting ad copy from a cafe in Portland, Oregon, or building websites from a home office in Melbourne, Australia. To learn more about Office Anywhere, just go to officeanywhere.co. About 2 years ago, I completed Pat Flynn's Power Up podcasting course, which is brilliant, by the way, and I set out on my podcasting journey. What began as an interview-style show quickly became a solo one, though, and there are a few very good reasons for that. First, it's a lot of work to research, book, and interview guests, especially when you're already chalking up 12-hour days, which is kind of common for me. Also, the post-production work for an interview-style show is a lot more than just running a solo show. But the biggest reason, really, was that the available technology made the whole process a major pain in the ass. It really was a pain trying to get quality audio out of remote interviews. So after more than 100 shows, less than a dozen of them were actually interview shows. But thanks to Squadcast, a solution that I discovered just recently, that has all changed. And in the last 3 weeks, I've recorded 6 interviews using their thoroughly brilliant platform. And of course, I'm recording on it right now. So there are a few things I'd like us to chat about today around subjects like podcasting, but also building a remote startup and attracting industry-leading advisors to your business. And to help us with that, we're very lucky to have the co-founder and CEO of Squadcast with us, Zachariah Marino. Welcome, Zach.
Thank you for having me, Peter. It's an honor to be on your show.
It's brilliant to have you here. I've just spent the last 10 minutes raving to Zach about how brilliant Squadcast is, and I'm just like a starry-eyed fanboy. So I didn't record all that because I didn't want to bore you with it. but tell me, Zach, Squadcast looks like a real family affair with a number of Marinos front and center there. So tell us how it all began and which one of you claims the credit for the idea.
Yeah. We're big on family, and I think that spills over into, you know, our relationships with our customers and the community. The podcast community is very, very tight knit, but simultaneously open to newcomers. So I think there's some, you know, interesting parallels there, but it's a good question. So it was my idea. I'll claim credit for it, but it wasn't really, you know, the roots of it weren't in wanting to do like some kind of SaaS internet business in technology or even audio. I wanted to do a creative side project because I'm a software engineer, and I was spending too much time writing code. So I wanted to kind of, I had grown up painting every day and being in a lot of art shows, and very fortunate to kind of win some awards in those types of activities. And it doesn't show up on my bio or LinkedIn often.
No, I didn't know that about you.
Yeah, I used to paint prolifically, and I missed that. So I wanted to explore, but I've worked in lots of creative mediums. I went to art school, and that's where I started software engineering as kind of the pinnacle of creativity is kind of how I view it. But I now that's no longer true. Doing a startup is for sure. But but yeah, so I wanted to kind of go back to those roots of doing a creative side project. But I had already done painting at a fairly high level. I had already done like sculpture, some of these other mediums at a fairly high level. Wow. So I've always been a fan of listening to podcasts because I have an addiction to learning new things, and podcasts makes that very accessible. And I look at it as kind of a step towards personalized education. And that's very much how I kind of was a consumer of podcasts. And my co-founder, Rock, actually, we're longtime friends. And he introduced me to podcasts as kind of a way to learn about stuff. And that was back when we were in high school. So, again, kind of back to the family roots there, but wanted to do a creative side project, and then read about these new types of podcasts that were not for education purposes, but more entertainment in the science fiction audio drama category that was a relatively new thing. It's still a relatively new thing as we're recording this. So wanted to kind of dip my toe in the water and write some sci-fi, but not really write a crappy Pulp Fiction novel, but like, but do it in podcasting and work with audio, because my brother Vince is an audio engineer. So I figured if we can't do this, who can? We should be able to do this. And like you, we ran into this problem of quality remote recording, and that was the bottleneck. So we kind of got inspired by that and decided to solve some of those problems.
Awesome. So that leads us perfectly into Squadcast and what it's about. So what is it? Who is it for? And what's it for? What does it do?
Yeah, Squadcast is it's a technology platform that connects people to have remote conversations like you would have on Skype or Zoom or a phone call, but you have the real-time audio video experience. So you have body language and eye contact in a very engaging conversation. But at the same time, what we do differently than those that I named is we focus above all else on quality and making sure that you're recording quality audio while you're having that engaging conversation. But the experience is, you know, almost the same. You just connect and have a great conversation. You hit record, you hit stop, and you walk away with audio files and content for your listeners that is way higher quality than you would get on a phone call or something like that. And that's really what we focus on now. It's also a startup. We've been at it about 3.5 years. And we empower professional podcasters and creatives to connect and create content together from anywhere in the world.
Mm. And it is incredibly good. It is incredibly good. I've used a lot of different tools. And as we were discussing before we actually kicked off the recording of this show, I'm always looking for things that do things better. But then by the same token, I should also say that when I find something that works, I don't keep looking. You know, I'm not one of these people who suffers from shiny, new shiny syndrome. When I have a solution that works, when I have a supplier that works, when I have a partner that works and there is that ongoing trust there and results happen, well, then I don't look at, you know, down the horizon to see if there's something better because that's just an endless cycle. Mm-hmm. And there is some real value in maturing with a product or a partner or a supplier or whoever it is over the long term. So I suspect I'll be using your solution for a very long time because it is excellent.
Thank you.
Podcasting started out as a bit quirky. It is still very much the Gold Rush era, even though there are swarms of people coming onto it now. But it was kind of like a geeky insiders type of platform.
Yeah,
I mean, I remember hearing on ABC Radio here in Australia, you know, listen to our podcast. I'm thinking, how the hell do you listen to a podcast? You know, what is it? What do I have to do? And it just always, the barrier just seemed too high and I couldn't be bothered. But the thing is, recently, podcasting has really gone mainstream in a really big way with major brands, broadcast networks, celebrities, and lots of other people joining the fray. I get emails almost every day now from agents representing people who are not in the podcasting space, who are not in the online space, seeking to get an interview slot on the show to promote their book, for example, or their consulting business or whatever it is that they're doing, you know. People are waking up that it is a fantastic platform getting exposure to audiences, you know. Mm-hmm. Because of this growth in popularity, it means that the standards and the expectations have gone up. Like anything, things become mainstream, people's expectations go up. And it's great for guys like you, because this is where you excel. You help podcasters to level up the quality of their interviews and the quality of their audio, because even though we're not recording this video, we can see each other. And as you said, you've got the body language, you've got all the subtleties that are essential in a good conversation. I'm bound to ask you about that tat on your arm at some point. And you just don't get that when you can't see each other. You know what I mean?
Especially when it's more than two people. You start to get into this, you can see, you can read body language when somebody's about to speak, right? So on a phone call, that's all lost. And that's why on these conference calls, you get kind of a moment of silence and then this collision of like four or five people, right? So
that's so true.
We've observed that.
That's so true. Yep. So can you tell us how you guys have managed to achieve such high levels of audio quality? And you just mentioned before we started a recent announcement that you've made about improving that to another level. So can you tell us a bit about how you've achieved that and why this is a game changer for the industry? I believe it's a game changer for the podcasting industry.
Thank you. That means a tremendous amount. I appreciate that. So we're very much students of kind of what's come before and what attempts at this type of technology had been done. And we started there We didn't try to invent something. We kept assuming that this was essentially a solved problem because podcasting had been around long enough. We started about 3.5 years ago. And, you know, at that time it was like podcasting has been around, you know, and probably a solved problem. So let's just keep researching, like to your point earlier. And we just never found a good answer. The industry OGs and, you know, people teaching at a high level all kind of, you know, coalesced around Skype with some other stuff duct taped on. And, but you know, when you kind of got below the surface, none of them were happy with that. They were just kind of repurposing a tool to suit their purposes. And they're used to doing stuff like that because of the pirate radio days, right? It's like, we'll just roll our own everything, you know? And, that's, I think really, what was kind of the state of the art when we approached the industry. But we very much went kind of back to square one and we're like, okay, how did people do this before the internet? How did radio stations used to do this? How are they still doing it to some extent? And really just kind of started to dig into that research process and thought experiments of, okay, what are kind of the you know nuggets of wisdom here in those approaches? And how can we automate that at scale now using some of the superpowers of the internet? And I had done my internship on the Google Chrome team. So I had watched kind of the web platform grow up and get a lot of these new superpowers, specifically with real-time collaboration, audio, video, some of these emerging capabilities that didn't used to exist on the web platform, where you used to kind of need like Flash Player and some other weird stuff to kind of get it there. And all of that stuff, none of it is in service of quality. It's like barely possible, let alone high quality. So that's really where we saw, like, okay, with the right kind of approach of learning from the historical approaches, we could both respect that, learn the best of kind of what's been done, but then also have this kind of fresh set of eyes on how we can use modern cloud architectures and real-time capabilities to all be in service of, above all else, high-quality audio. So we do that in a couple different ways to your question. And we primarily focus on recording everybody locally on their own device and computer. And that's okay. Really what is the source of the audio is coming out of your mouth, right? And being picked up by your microphone. So we want to remove everything in between your microphone and your guest microphone and, you know, our ability to record that and have a great conversation. So we really just try to get out of the way there. Don't really, you know, do anything crazy to the audio. Respect it and not you know, compression or anything like that. We think of it as kind of like organic produce, where, you know, it's kind of defined by what is not happening. And that is how we respect that. Thank you. And, and that's gotten us, you know, pretty far. We've been able to help lots of people, record awesome sounding remote conversations. And to the guest, it's kind of a bit of a parlor trick. You know, you think they're in the same location, and to the guests, they don't know any different, and that's good. They don't really care about that, right? And that if they are thinking about those things in the back of their mind, then they're not thinking about you or your guest message, which is why they came to listen. So, you know, really respecting the audio. And so I will add something there, though, that even if we get you awesome sounding audio, and or if we can record, I should say, awesome sounding audio, and you never get that file, then it kind of doesn't matter. So there were some previous attempts before Squadcast that kind of fell into that category where they had kind of taken some steps towards quality, but really, really, really fell very short on the reliability and ability to deliver that quality every time. And that's really kind of the sweet spot that we've been able to meet people in. And we do that through some innovative technology that we've developed and is now, I'm proud to say, patent pending on how we upload that audio in a reliable way. We have automatic backups. Some of these things, you know, progressive upload, as we call it. And then also kind of normalizing for audio drift is another one that saves people a ton of time in post-production to not have to fix something that shouldn't be broken in the first place. So, you know, there's a lot of things that we internally call, like, you know, some invisible features. They're below the surface, but they really add up towards, you know, the quality, and not just quality, but quality every time. And that's really what we're proud to empower podcasts and creatives with. We believe that creativity is enhanced when you're out of your individual silo, and when you can connect and collaborate with other people, the creativity just gets, you know, amplified and gets taken in new directions that nobody really planned for or designed for, kind of like improv, where you kind of don't know where you're going to end up, but that's a positive thing all around.
Yeah, so much of what you said there is so true, and it's born out in my own experience that as soon as you ask a guest to perform any kind of technical function, straight away it just takes the whole, it just destroys the whole vibe of the conversation, and it's just something that's in the back of your mind the whole time. But when someone can just click on a button, pop up, they see you, you see them, and you just start chatting, it is it makes the conversation so much easier to get into, and you can just riff, you know, and you don't have to think, you don't have to monitor stuff, you know, and the stuff that you do need, that you might want to look at, like how the audio is going. I can see there, I can see a nice little bar going up and down that's not going red. So I'm doing all right there. And when you talk, you know, and if we're having a little bit of an issue with internet, then we're going to have a look and go, okay, how's my internet? Oh, my internet's very good. I click on a button, I can see it, and you can do the same. It's brilliant. I was, I just ordered the new MacBook Pro 16, spec'd one up the other day. Nice. Because mine's 7 years old and it's been working brilliantly up until about a month ago.
Oh, yeah. And that's a pretty good shelf life. That's good.
Yeah, yeah, I was impressed. Yeah. I mean, I've already replaced the battery once under warranty, but it has been really, really good, especially if you're doing video. But, you know, I was watching the ad, you know, the little film on the Apple website, and that movie producer, I forgot his name now, the black dude with the mohawk, he's so cool. And he was saying how, you know, technology, he doesn't want it to get in the way of the creative process. He wants it to be invisible.
Yeah.
And once the technology just does what it needs to do, then you can be creative. And that is so true. Even if you're a geek who loves technology like I do and like I know you do, when it comes to doing creative work, we don't want to be conscious of it. We don't want to be aware of it. Let's talk a little bit more about podcasting and the opportunity for people, given that it is such a rapidly growing segment. What sort of opportunity do you think exists for new podcasters, and how can it help them to either start or to grow an existing business?
Yeah, I mean, so there's this kind of debate going on within the podcast community. It's like, because it's been growing so rapidly, is this kind of the peak of podcasting? And I'm in the camp firmly that that's kind of a joke, because the numbers,
nowhere near it.
The data is so clear compared to kind of the closest alternative, let's call it YouTube, with video. Definitely a different form of content and different approach and marketing and all of those things. But you know, the appetite of people for that style of content, I think, does translate nicely to the audience. These lines are very blurry, if not existent at all. So in the Infinite Dial report that Edison delivers every year, Edison Research, they asked, you know, audience members how they think about these two different things. And to them, it's just a show. So whether they get to it on YouTube and there's visuals when they're kind of on their lunch break or something like that, they can watch it. They will. But when they're in their car, you know, they want to also listen to Pat Flynn, you know, learn from him and the different things that he's working on. So they can kind of, these lines are very blurry from the audience perspective. I think they kind of only exist in the creative's mind. Yeah, it's good for us. And it also, you know, there's this also conversation around being locked into one platform or one medium, right? And being able, like, deplatforming and stuff like that. So it gives you the freedom to take your audience with you and, you know, be creative in these different mediums, whether that's on TikTok or, you know, your podcast or whatever. So the opportunity in podcasting is huge. The number of channels on YouTube is in the millions for sure. And podcasting is nearing 1 million shows active on iTunes. So there's lots of headroom to grow. And then podcasting also really thrives in very, very niche topics. which yes. I believe there are endless combinations of these niches. So that's a beautiful thing that is a strength of podcasting. And then as well as, you know, monetization opportunities. I think a lot of times podcasting gets kind of typecast as having one form of monetization with kind of host
sponsorship,
or, you know, ad reads, whether those be, host read ads or kind of, you know, dynamic ad insertion is kind of one of the technology topics of the day in our industry. But that kind of tech has existed for a long time on the web. It's existed for a long time on YouTube. So it's kind of, you know.
And TV and radio.
Yeah, exactly. So these things are pretty well understood. But, you know, the one that I see work for people most often is that it's a marketing channel that you own for your business. And your podcast isn't actually the thing that your product that you are monetizing. It is a an awareness channel. It is a marketing channel to do content marketing for your business that actually is your product that you're selling. So
yes.
That model I've seen work many, many more times often than, you know, the like the Jordan Harbingers that have these awesome CPM deals with, you know, mid-roll or all of those types of things. That's going to be kind of a upper percentile, right? But
yes,
but lots of people have awesome businesses. And if you can grow your business by, you know, a few percent a year because you are talking with other people about your you know, area of expertise that your business meets some demand in, then that's a really strong parallel. And nobody's going to deplatform you from your podcast, right? You own that content. It's yours.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you hit on so many good points there. And this is an often misunderstood thing that the platform is the end game, but it's not. It's what feeds the funnel.
Yeah.
And the end game needs to be something that you own, something that you control, and something that you support independent of the platform. So the platforms can come and go, they can change, they can evolve, but ultimately you own your content, you own your products, and they need to reside somewhere where you have absolute control.
And this is true for YouTube as well, where you know, YouTubers who are operating at the highest level, they have their website, they have their videos on there as well. YouTube is just one channel that they put their stuff on, and it's a huge, you know, discoverability opportunity and monetization opportunity and engagement, and it provides some things that you probably don't have or want to build into your own website, but the same rings true there. So I think that you know, just having that approach is probably a good thing, depending on the platforms come and go.
I totally agree. My daughter, Sarah, is now 17, but she's been doing videos on YouTube since she was 13.
Wow.
And she built up 140,000 subscribers doing makeup tutorials. And she's always been, she's a very unique girl. She's just gorgeous. But ever since she was 2 or 3 years old, she was always in her own little world. She would grab a phone and she would talk to it and she would do her own little videos. And she didn't care what anybody else thought, just super confident, but very content with her own company. And then she went through the sort of the pre-teens years and awkward, FOMO, peer pressure, all this sort of stuff. And then she just kind of broke out of it. She had crooked teeth. We got her braces. She got those fixed up. Her confidence went up. Then she lost a bit of weight. She got more confidence. And then she discovered makeup. And she decided to start doing, you know, videos on those. Anyway, the long and the short of it is she built up this wonderful following. She got invited to a YouTube Creators Conference with about 15 others.
Awesome.
And I went to that with her, and that was really cool. And, you know, people stop her still in the street, Sarah, 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 you know, and they rush up to her and they want to say hi to her. But the thing is, and the point I wanted to make was there was a point there where she was making thousands a month because she had monetized her videos, and she had a few that went viral, millions and millions of views.
Wow.
And I told her this many, many times, do not rely on monetization of your videos, because that is the short game. You need to develop a couple of products like ebooks, for example, or short video training courses that teach people how to do specific things in makeup and drive people to that.
Right.
And she's never done it. And then, of course, once the viral video stopped, you know, her income stopped. And now that we're in this lockdown with coronavirus, she can't do makeup for clients anymore, because she was booked solid doing makeup for clients.
Oh, she's doing it professionally, you know, as well.
She was doing it, you know, outside of school, you know,
excellent,
after school and on weekends. She'd be booked from 5 a.m. to 10 p.m. doing weddings and all sorts of stuff.
Wow.
just killing it, doing models for photo shoots and things. Anyway, that's all dried up, of course. So now she's desperately thinking, okay, how can I make money, you know? And so now she's looking at webinars, and now she started doing videos again to drive traffic to something she's finally going to sell. So
very good.
Podcasting suits that approach perfectly. Definitely the best way to make money is to create the things that you have absolute control over, that you're passionate about, that live in a place that you manage, like your own website, and then use podcasting to drive people to that.
If I can,
I've crapped on about that long enough.
Yeah, if I can add one thing, it's very interesting because a lot of people in podcasting kind of long for a YouTube of podcasting. But I think that it's actually one of the strengths of podcasting that it's more distributed. And there's some strengths to that. There's some drawbacks to that. But I think, you know, that's one of the areas that, that podcasting is unique, is that, you know, you don't have this kind of overarching view of what, you know, your content should look like, let's say, or something like that, or a format or a box or anything like that. You know, and the prime example is the audio drama creatives that just kind of created a new genre of podcast. I think it's even bigger than a genre, because podcasting before audio dramas was kind of like, it would be kind of like walking into a bookstore and it was all nonfiction. Or a library or something like that. And it's all nonfiction. You're just like, okay, well, what about some, you know, what about some fiction? What about some storytelling or like some sci-fi? Where's that? And it's just like, well, this is podcasting. That's not what we do. So I think it's the whole other half of the coin. You know, it just opened up this tremendous possibility of what people can do with kind of the narrative vocal storytelling as a medium. So so that's kind of, you know, a really great case study of there is no box with podcasting, and because it's distributed, there is no format. You know, you're it's a blank sheet of paper, and that can be freeing, but that can also, you know, sometimes creative constraints are a good thing. So interviews provides kind of a loose framework, you know, but you can make it your own, and it's going to be different each time with a different person.
Well, the good thing is, I guess you can choose whether you want to follow a template, and that gives you a sense of certainty and structure. Or if you are the blank sheet creative, like an art director I used to work with who was brilliant at that, and I never was, then you're free to create whatever you like. You know, I like a bit of structure. I like a bit of a bit of a template to follow.
Same here.
With certain things. I can look at something and go, I know why that's wrong, and I know what needs to be fixed. But I admire the person who starts with a clean screen or a clean sheet of paper and goes, what will I create? Because that's much harder.
Yeah, different skills.
Yeah. Well, tell me, from a setup point of view, and this kind of harks into the limitations that we've experienced ourselves in the past few years. So from a setup point of view, what are the options for someone starting out in podcasting if they want to do interviews with people?
Yeah, setup requirements are pretty minimal. And this is one of the great things about podcasting is I mentioned the kind of distributed nature of kind of sets the tone across things. So one of the things that I've heard from new podcasters is that it can kind of be frustrating because it's distributed. You kind of have to put together your own pieces of how you want things, but that's also a tremendous amount of freedom. So you have options for how you do things. But in the beginning, that can be kind of a lot. And I respect that. That is true. But the good news is that it's fundamentally fairly simple once you kind of remove the marketing stuff. So I'll take off my, you know, Squadcast marketing hat for a minute here and kind of what does a new podcaster need as a minimum? What is a podcast? So you need to have audio of some kind. So let's not really get into that just yet. I mean, you could use Squadcast to have a remote conversation and sound great. You could just talk to your phone. There's, you know, whatever you'd like to do. But you got to have some kind of audio, and then that audio needs to get on the internet somewhere. Cool. That's not so hard. People are, you know, figured out how to get media files on the web. The web's pretty mature. Media files on the web are pretty mature as well. So you really just need a place that's going to be able to serve up that MP3 file for audio. And you need to just not fall over if, you know, it goes viral and a million people listen to it. So that's where you get into this kind of category of podcast hosting, which that term hosting, if I can pause there for a second, gets used all over the place in podcasting. And I think it's one of the things that confuses people is I myself am a host. I need a hosting provider. You know, there's these different uses of that same word. So I think it kind of gets demeaned a little bit. But you need a place on the internet, much like you'd have a website. But that's really just to store your audio files. And when somebody subscribes to you in iTunes or something like that, and plays your podcast, that's where that file is going to come from on over the internet. So you need to have that kind of distribution mechanism. And those are called podcast hosts. Mm-hmm. And
like Libsyn, for example.
Exactly. Libsyn or Simplecast or Captivate, all great options. And, you know, that's kind of what you care about when you first start your podcast is like, all right, how do I get my podcast onto, you know, the Apple Podcast app or Spotify or Google Podcasts? How do I get in here? And you, it's pretty easy. You just need one of those hosting providers that I mentioned. And when you upload a file, you give it kind of an episode name. You can add some other stuff like a description, which is all good for kind of discoverability. And then you, they give you a link that you just go and you add that into the Apple directory and the Google and Spotify directory. And the good hosts now let you do that kind of right there. You could just say, submit that. And like a day or two later, you're there, you're in the app, your, you know, album artwork is there. Your podcast artwork is there, your name, people can search for you. You can listen to your files, all that stuff. But then what do you care about once you're there? You know, that initial hurdle is kind of over and you start thinking about episode two, your concerns immediately switch from how do I get into this app to who's listening and what are they listening to and for how long and are they enjoying it and who's like actually engaging with this? So that's the lens that I recommend new podcasters consider their choice for where they're going to put their files on the internet. It's not so much that it's some kind of fancier thing where, you know, it'll sound better from one provider like Libsyn versus Simplecast. They're going to sound the same. They're going to serve up the audio you gave them. Whereas something like Squadcast, that can actually improve the quality and actually move the needle of that. So there's considerations for the type of experience you'd like to deliver to your audience. But the concern immediately switches after you have a presence in the app to those metrics that I mentioned, who's listening, for how long, what are they listening to? And that's really the hosting providers. I think they bill themselves a little off. They should really, you know, and Simplecast does the best job of this. It's really an analytics provider. Where's that data? And on YouTube, like, you know, top YouTube people, they're in YouTube Creator Studio looking at the engagement on their videos for when people, you know, click pause, if they scrubbed, like how long did they watch for? If that ad in the middle really got, you know, 50% of the audience out, then maybe don't do that next time. And once you have these measurements, you can start to optimize things. And that's really where I would, you know, recommend people make an informed podcast decision. Where to start with is really look at those numbers. They will matter to you in a short amount of time. And then it matters for you, you know, beyond that. So it's just kind of this initial hurdle that people are making their purchase decision on. But really, it's the lifelong, you know, many episodes of your podcast that are going to matter with that analytic data.
Mm. And the thing is, too, of course, is the content sits there forever. So, you know, what might not matter in the beginning because you're on to episode three and you're, you know, still wet behind the ears, over time, that's going to continue to attract listeners.
Yeah, evergreen.
Who might like... They might enjoy what you did in episode 90 and then I want to binge listen all the way back to number one, you know, so they're still going to get listens.
Yeah. And a lot of times the episodes individually will surface in search results, especially now with Google kind of, you know, treating podcasts and audio as kind of first class citizens within search and web content is they'll surface, you know, an episode where you touched on this one topic and maybe that's the doorway that some listeners find the rest of your conversations equally as engaging for them. So discoverability is really getting a kick in the pants with you know, Spotify and Google taking this stuff seriously. So that's really good for SEO. I mean, like we talked about the business marketing strategy earlier. If you are looking for an advantage with SEO, that's a really big one that your competitors probably aren't even, you know, hip to yet.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's talk more about business, particularly remote business. right now you have, as I understand it, five main guys in your team. So it's you, Rock, Alex, Vince Jr. and Vince Sr. Three Marinos there.
Yeah.
So are you all in the same location or do you collaborate remotely?
We collaborate remotely, but we're all within California. So we are a remote first organization and we really, you know, live it and we use our product all the time to talk to each other, to record our own podcast interviews with between two mics, where Rock and I talk to people in podcasting who are moving things forward in one way or another. And and then our team, yeah, we are fully remote, as well as our team of advisors who you mentioned before. We're very proud to work with some awesome human beings. And then we work with a number of folks that do kind of smaller contract work with us, and they're all over the world.
Cool. So what sort of tools do you use to manage these people and your collaborations and, you know, projects and supporting customers, all that sort of stuff? What's the tool set that you rely on?
Yeah. So it's a couple of things. We, of course, are a technology company first, and we are in service of the podcast community. So we have embraced a number of, you know, tools and platforms that help us be productive with a remote structure like this. And then there's also some cultural facets that I think don't get mentioned enough. One that we really lean on heavily is over communication with empathy. So that I think is really critical, because if the majority of your conversations are happening over chat or email or you know, not in person, there can be stuff, you know, people read between the lines, they read things differently, there can be miscommunications. So, you know, we use emojis quite a lot to help communicate emotion. We over communicate with kind of explaining our intentions and context on things. And then there are tools that help with that. So so we rely pretty heavily on Basecamp, I'm really glad to say. And that's a relatively new one for us, and we have embraced it dramatically and quickly. So
it's a good tool. I've used it for years.
Yeah, yeah. And also, you know, also a bootstrap SaaS company with an amazing story. And we're proud to also be a bootstrap SaaS company. And also, you know, on a ton of podcasts and kind of very near and dear to that team's heart. So Basecamp has been great for us because it allows for that contextual conversation within the work that you're collaborating on. Whereas like Slack is another tool that we use, and that's more like disposable. Stuff gets lost. We're not using it as a repository for things. We use it to have very quick conversations with groups of people, either one-on-one or you know, in small groups. And we kind of use a combination of those two. And then I'll mention a few other kind of bonus ones. Rock and I both are big fans of Superhuman. It's an email app that
I saw that.
Yeah, is pretty unique. I was very, very skeptical because, you know, email is email, but they've done a really...
Don't mess with it.
They've done an amazing job on empowering people to stay at zero inbox, which is something that I've always strived for and upheld. But it really just accelerates that and amplifies it, and it kind of makes it fun. So, you know, we use a bunch of other tools as well, but I think those are the big ones, as well as Squadcast itself. I think, you know, once we realized that we could use our app to build our app or support our app with our app, those were really big moments for us where it was like, okay, you know, we are building a way to communicate here. It is beneficial to record some of those conversations, to have things like, you know, records and stuff like that. But then we also use Zoom, you know, fairly regularly. I think the other day, Rock and I, in one day, of course, use Squadcast, but we used BlueJeans, we use Zoom, we use Google Hangouts, we use Slack's built-in kind of conversation video feature, the phone, you know, and chat and all of that other stuff. So we're very much, you know, students of different ways to do this stuff. And I think we kind of each have our strength. And I used to work in the government. So, you know, Skype and Zoom, for what they're doing in the enterprise, is really good fit. But you know, for creative purposes, I think, you know, the tools really matter, to your point before, where it really needs to get out of your way and not get, you know, not have any opinions about quality, just kind of give you the raw stuff to work with. That's very much how we think about it.
Do you have any specific policies or processes that you follow with respect to managing your team? And I suspect it's a little bit different for you because you have, you know, a fair bit of family involved. So you're not about to impose rules on your old man. But, you know, do you have any policies or processes that you follow to make it your remote team, I guess, accountable and more effective?
A ton of processes. Policies, not so much. I mean, the size helps with that. I'm sure we will need more policies and structure. But we have a strong governance in place for our company. We rely heavily on our advisors as kind of a sounding board and check against our own sanity. It can be easy to kind of go off and spin off in one direction and spin your wheels too fast. And startups, we want to move fast always. So, you know, you need kind of a sounding board for a lot of that stuff to say, no, this is a distraction. I am a big fan of Dan Martell. He's an entrepreneur and also podcaster. And he said something to me one time that really stands out. And that's that startups tend to die from indigestion. People think that they die of starvation without not having enough to do or not having enough opportunities or things like that, where things just kind of dry up. The opposite turns out to be way more true way more often, where founders get distracted, team gets distracted, they'll get involved in too many things. There's all these opportunities. There's all these things. You can't say no to anything because you're doing everything for the first time and it all matters a lot. But we focus on, you know, being really, really decisive and you know, not being, I think the moments that stand out to Rock and I both more are the times that we've said no to things. I believe that, you know, there's a lot of times people talk about things you should do in your startup and your business. I don't think people talk enough about things you shouldn't do. There's a ton of pitfalls. There's a ton of mistakes you can make that can, you know, over the course of a couple months or a year or something, play out and really lead to the end of things in a gnarly way. So so that's kind of what we focus on, is like, it's also important what we're not doing. So focus is a really big one for us. Empowering our team with their own faculty and decisive opportunities to grow their own teams, to grow their own processes. I think one that stands out to me, to give you a clear answer on your question, is like, if you're doing something, you know, it's probably a good thing. You should probably document it. So we're big on documentation. Basecamp really accelerates that for us and has been tremendous for my own writing, I will say. And you know, we're really liking it because writing kind of versus Slack or email or something like that, it really drives a different level of kind of clarity to really organize your thoughts and actually kind of advocate for something in a clear, concise way. But also another one that I will say is we also focus on the length of things. We want things to be really short. All the emails that we send and all of our messaging and everything, we're trying to make it as concise as possible to just get it really, really small. And sometimes that feels like a distraction because, you know, it's probably just faster to hit send. And what are they going to, you know, my word choice going to matter in this one email or something like that. But that's another one where we try to respect people's time on the receiving end, including each other. So we try to be really, we try to over communicate, but we try to do that in a very concise way with a lot of empathy. So that's kind of a tough constraint to meet, and we do pretty good at it.
I really like that. I had a very good mentor, still have a good mentor, who I've known for about 22 years. He was the CEO of the company that I've worked with for the longest and still work with. And now he's the chairman of the board, semi-retired. But he said, and I'm actually doing the opposite of what he said. He said, never say in 30 words what you can say in five.
Yeah, I think Mark...
people aren't impressed.
Exactly. Mark Twain has this quote. Or I think he gets a, you know, an attribution for it, but it's like, sorry, I wrote you a long letter. I didn't have time to write you a short one. And that always stuck out at me. It, like, anybody can blather on, right? But Anytime I open up an email and it's like, you know, I have to scroll to see it. I mean, attorneys kind of get a pass because, you know, they're in their own little world. Yeah, exactly. They pay by the word, I guess. But yeah, I love our attorneys, so I shouldn't put them down. But it's long stuff, you know, long form, emphasis on long. But yeah, it just kind of, you know, it's just kind of like, oh, this person didn't respect my time. And then I'll try to prove my point to them by sending them like a one line answer, something like that. So I think that that also, you know, helps with the culture. But, you know, saying what needs to be said and kind of nothing more, that's fine with us.
Yeah. Seth Godin is brilliant at that. Seth Godin is one of my all time heroes, and he is very good with brevity.
Purple Cow, right? Did he write that one?
Yeah. Yeah. Ton of books. He's absolutely brilliant. I actually did another project in a previous website, Midlife Tribe, which I ran for a few years. It still sits there. It's like a live archive, but I'm not updating it at the moment. And I wanted to do a series of midlife mentors, anyone over 40 who has been a mentor to me, either directly or indirectly. And I had a list of about 10 people that I wanted to approach, and Seth Godin was the pinnacle. He would be the last one.
Yeah, the stretch.
I was scared shitless to approach him. And he's iconic, you know.
Very.
And he's incredibly busy. So I paid a brilliant copywriter in New York, Laura Belgray, to spend half an hour with me to go through what I was going to pitch to these people who I wanted to participate in
this. I don't think everybody would have done that. I think that is a pretty unique approach. You know, a lot of people just think, you know, you're knocking on a door. You know, who knows what's going to open?
But you got to make it.
But with the right knock, you can get the door to open, right?
Yeah. Well, Laura's not cheap either. She's $500 for half an hour.
Nice.
She was charging $7,000 a day.
Wowzers! Good for her.
But anyway. Laura and I had that conversation, and there weren't many corrections needed, which was good. But at the end of it, I felt confident enough that I had something, a compelling story to tell. So I thought, stuff it. I'm going to approach Seth first, not last. So I spent probably 3 hours putting together the email to which I was attaching the synopsis of what I was proposing. Mm. And much to my amazement, he came back in less than 24 hours with, sure, I'll do it.
That's ideal.
That was amazing. And it's very much like what you were saying before, is to, it may not be the most efficient in terms of time investment, but investing in respecting people's time at the receiving end and being very careful with your choice of words matters, because you may only get one shot at something. We certainly only get one shot at a first impression, and it's worth the investment if the outcome you seek is important.
Yes.
So I really admire the way that you approach communication.
Thank you.
I'm going to cut past some of these questions that I had for you, because you've actually already addressed them. One of my key questions was how you decide what to say no to, and you know how important that is, and you've talked about that.
It's it's an evolving filter, but I think a lot of it comes down to what are the opportunity costs? What are the quality of those opportunities?
Because not all opportunities are equal, that's for sure.
No, and there are a lot of them, you know, and I think a lot of times startups get really, really, really wound up in marketing efforts, and that's one of the things that we spend a shocking little amount of time on. And we're very lucky that our product has an element of kind of growth built into it.
Yes, it has the network effect, which Seth talks about a lot.
Yes, and that was not by design, I'll admit. It was something that we, I believe, read a book called, it's called Platform Makers or something to that effect. Mm-hmm. That title doesn't sound right, so I apologize to the author. But there's this metric, a obscure metric within startups called viral cycle time. And that's the amount of time it takes somebody using your application to invite another person to use your application or your platform. And, you know, Facebook has an element of this. Others do. Facebook really threw gasoline on the fire by adding the kind of embeddable like button all over the web for people to use. So kind of tentacles out in the real world. But for us, you know, it's podcasters interviewing awesome people. And those awesome people tend to also be connected to podcasts in one way or another, whether they have their own or something similar, or they work with a lot of people who do podcasts. So that, Andrew Yang was interviewed by Kara Swisher on the Recode Decode podcast, and he's starting a podcast. So they're using Squadcast. And we've seen versions of that play out over and over. So I'm very grateful for that. But it allows us to not really spend too much time on marketing. I think our marketing efforts are like content marketing, which I don't even really think of as marketing. I think of it as education, which is near and dear to my heart. And then community with particular events that we sponsor and attend and speak at. The podcast community, like I kind of said in the beginning, you know, is a big part of what we're doing and has been the idea kind of fuel for Squadcast along this whole way. We try to be really, really strong listeners. And we find that that's a really good balance in an industry full of people who are professional speakers. So we just try to be really good at listening.
Yeah, this is a real advantage that you have in the world of online business. There is a propensity to spend 80% of the time marketing and 20% of the time producing quality things worth talking about. And of course, that's the wrong way around. And Seth Godin is who's probably the world's leading expert on marketing. He is absolutely brilliant. But he is a proponent of, first and foremost, having something to talk about, something remarkable to talk about. Whatever you've created, it has to be remarkable. And then, and only then, do you move on to the next step, and that is to talk to people about it and to impress them so much with what you've created that they then sell it for you. You don't have to go out and advertise and disrupt people's attention and put Super Bowl ads up and all that sort of stuff. By impressing people with this remarkable thing that you've created, they will sell it for you. And that's exactly what's happening with Squadcast, and I'm sure it's going to continue to accelerate because you invested all the time in step one. You don't need to invest 80% of your budget on step two.
Well, it's a bit surreal because when you read Seth's work and you know people like him saying those things, to the average reader, it comes across as highly theoretical. You know, it's like, okay, that sounds nice, you know, and all that stuff. But you know, to your point, to live it is bizarre to me. I mean, I want to do good work, right? And I want to empower others to be creative. And to be able to find a way to marry those two things together and really find a way for my own creative outlets to enhance other people's creative outlets is just a dream come true. And
it's the ultimate, isn't it?
Yes, exactly. And that's really...
For a creative, it's the ultimate.
That's really what... really, for me, I believe what sets the bar very high with the quality of the work that we put out into the world is that, you know, it's hard as a founder to not identify personally with your product. And that's something that I've dealt with, especially when receiving constructive criticism on your work in the beginning, especially with our, you know, our alpha and our beta and all that stuff. And I went to art school. I learned how to take constructive criticism and take that stuff well. But when it's your baby and you've put so much time and love and work into it and have high standards, for it to just kind of fall flat on its face is just,
it's demoralizing.
It can be. But those people, really what, you know, I've come to realize is that those people want it to succeed more than you do. They're more passionate somehow even than you are. And that's why they care so much to be, you know, passionate with their feedback. So those are always, you know, unique conversations that we have with people and find ways to turn those into positive things where we just, you know, go back to listening. We listen to what they say. We take it seriously. We shut up and do the work. And then we let them know, hey, your fingerprints, your ideas, you're part of this now, forever, future forward, because you contributed your passion and we use that as fuel to make the product better. And we just keep doing that over and over and over again and it adds up. And here we are, you know, a couple of years later.
Yeah. And the thing is, too, is sometimes it can be frustrating as a creator when somebody gives you an opinion looking at the very, very thin veneer of what they see on the top, and you go, but you don't know all the obstacles that I overcame to get to that point. And all these things you're saying, it should be this and it should be that. That can't be done because I've already been down that road seven different ways and it can't be done. And that's why it's like this. But the reality is, first time user coming in doesn't give a crap about all those obstacles you overcome. Nope. They say, but why doesn't it do this?
Yep.
You know?
Exactly.
I just spoke to ex-Miss Singapore, Janisha Allura.
Nice.
She was Miss Singapore years ago, but she runs a large business in Southeast Asia with 200,000 members.
Wow.
And she plucked out a saying from her mother. She said, let your mess be your message. You know, whatever your mess is, let that become your message. And, you know, the mess that has become the message of Squadcast, to an effect, is podcasting with remote guests has been a mess for a long time. It's bloody hard. It's flaky. It's inconsistent. It's unprofessional. It's low quality. It alienates people. It frustrates interviewers and guests. And that became the message that drove the evolution of Squadcast, which solved all of those problems beautifully. How much time do we have left, Zach? Because I know you got to nick off pretty soon.
Yeah, I gotta take some product shots here with my team to get some updates on our homepage. We're getting better at communicating some of this work that we've. A lot of our features are invisible, you know, and we're getting better at communicating that stuff, like progressive upload or automatic backups or these different features. They're below the surface and they really add up. So we're getting better at communicating that stuff and.
Well, mate, if I can help in any way, I've been a web designer for 25 years. So if I can help you with any of that stuff, you just shout out and let me know. I'll be happy to do it for you.
Thank you, Peter. We'll get you into Figma when we have a more high fidelity design to get, you know, we'll respect your time, of course. And that would be very much appreciated. Thank you.
10 word sentences maximum. All right.
You got it.
All right. Well, let's finish up with a couple of things. We'll skip a few questions, but I do want to highlight something. Your amazing advisors who've joined you and often, the advisors that a fledgling company attracts is a real testament to what lies under the surface. And you've attracted some brilliant ones. You've got, you know, Harry Duran of Podcast Junkies. You've got one of my all-time heroes, Pat Flynn, who I mentioned in the intro. Yes. You've got one of the world's most successful podcasters, Jordan Harbinger. And recently you've also gotten Esprit Devora. You've got Adriana Flores-Ragard and you've got Scott Winston. So how did you attract all this incredible talent?
I don't...
Apart from the obvious that the product is awesome.
Yeah, I mean, each of them is a unique story. And these things take time, right? So I think Harry was our founding advisor. And Harry, when we met him, our product was like barely alpha. We had just kind of started collaborating with the podcast community to get feedback to sanity check our work and our assumptions and all that stuff. And he really just within the first 10 minutes of speaking to him, he threw away 99% of the work that we had planned to do. And we were going to build this amazing platform with everything under the sun for podcasters. And he really brought it back down to the core problem that we found and set out to solve. And that's quality remote interviews. So that was very much, eye-opening for us. It was painful to have so much of our vision just kind of ripped apart in front of us. Behind that advice was really a profound, you know, pattern now that we've observed with Harry, working closely with him. So that day started, a multi-year relationship. But for the first year, we met with Harry weekly. With taking his feedback, he was basically the podcast community's voice synthesized down into one person. And that made it very efficient for us to get to work each week based on his feedback and then show him, get more feedback, and just keep going through that cycle. And that was incredible for us, especially in the beginning. So credit to Harry for lots of things. Thank you, Harry. And that continues today. I mean, I'll give him credit for the original idea behind Progressive Upload. I mean, just questioning, you know, me telling him it's not possible. We're trying everything. We're trying different ways. We're trying all these different things. Yeah, and he just wouldn't take that for, you know, take no for an answer. So so now we have two patents because of that, and patents pending, I should say. So yeah. it's an amazing thing to experience and be part of. So he was just the first, and really, you know, Jordan has his own unique story where we got a cold email from him where I guess he was kind of watching us from a distance for a little while and had been using Squadcast kind of undercover. But he really found us because of the element of virality that I mentioned before. He was interviewed on somebody's show, and he was really dialed into the other options out there for how to do remote interviews, and really spotted something unique in what we were doing. And that was back in the V1 days before we even rebuilt it with, you know, the app that we're using now with full screen video and all these other things. So we got off a plane in DC with a cold email from Jordan Harbinger. And, you know, after we freaked out for, you know, 5-10 minutes or something like that, but we waited for our Uber, you know, we started drafting some kind of response to him, and that played out. Esprit and Adriana, we've been working with for a long time, and both, you know, have incredible schedules to contend with. So I wish that we would have formalized those relationships sooner, but we've been working with both of them for quite a while, and just kind of more in a mentor informal capacity. So I'm really grateful to bring them on board officially as of Monday of this week. So really, really excited about that. They each have their own superpowers. Esprit is just kind of a ray of sunshine and inspiration to the podcast community.
She's got a killer smile, a blinding smile, hasn't she?
She has the most energy, I think, of anybody that I know. And I'm glad that that's positive energy, because she would be a supervillain if it were negative. So, yeah. And then just each of them have their own story. Scott Winston is, he's a kind of a master negotiator, and has worked behind the scenes in a lot of different giant tech companies, and just an amazing individual who sees patterns that other people don't. Adriana is connected with everybody and is just an amazing inspiration to the Latino founder community within California and really the world with her podcast, Latinx America. And, you know, the experience to back all that up on top of being a great human being. Pat was actually introduced to us through Jordan, but then our first conversation with him, it was super clear that, like, this needs to be a thing. Like this, and I think he was actually the fastest one that we worked to onboard, because it was just so clear from day one. And it's been a ton of moments. It's like being shot out of a rocket with him, like shot out of a cannon, I should say, him, where, you know, from day one, we were just kind of hit the ground running with momentum building every time we collaborate. So as a bootstrap startup, one of the things that is oftentimes not mentioned with traditional startups raising venture capital is that oftentimes we think of venture capital as capital, as money, you know, to operate your business. But beyond that, once you have the money in your bank account, they become advisors to you, because they're protecting their investment, they're helping you succeed and creating relationships and all of those things. And that oftentimes can make all the difference, even if you have all the money in the world. So that is something that we knew early on, that if we weren't going to raise capital, at least for a while, like, because we're not zealous for bootstrapping, you know, we talk and work with a lot of venture capitalists. A lot of them are our customers now, and we always seek advice from them. So, you know, we're, as first-time founders, we're not going to turn our nose up at anybody with experience. Like, we're not naive or anything like that. So always opportunities to learn.
You're not precious about it.
No. But it was more so an experiment of, let's see how far we can take this. Let's try to grit down and have our day jobs for as long as we can while running the business smoothly. And then when it makes financial sense, we'll try to jump and do it full-time. And we're very grateful to have, you know, been able to achieve any amount of success with that plan. But one of the things that gets sacrificed as a bootstrap company is, if you're not taking on venture capital, you're also foregoing that advice. And we did not want to forego that advice. So we were very deliberate about seeking awesome advisors, and we still are. And I don't think that journey is anywhere close to done. And we're getting into a category now where, or, you know, a space now where the list is incredibly short and incredibly specific. And like you with Seth Godin, like stretch goals. I'm really grateful to say that, you know, some of those relationships, like I said, they take time, but some of them are already developing. And I'm really, really hopeful that there's some big opportunities that still lie ahead.
Mm. I think it was actually Jordan Harbinger that said on his website, you know, dig the well before you need the water. Mm.
Yeah.
I think that might have been his website.
I would not be surprised. Up, you know, he is something else. He is fundamentally, he's an amazing communicator. And that just amplifies all of his other abilities. And he's just, you know, one of the smartest people you'll meet. And I can't say enough good things about Jordan. And you know, our time working with him, he has he's, you know, really, really down, holds it down for the podcast community, is you know, has his roots and is not like so big that he won't talk to people or whatever. Like, he's out at Podcast Movement talking to people, you know, learning from speakers and just with everybody else. And I think we're all looking for ways to be you know, even half of what Jordan's been able to achieve. But at the same time, he's still very much a student of ways that could be better. So that's inspiring to us.
And that is the hallmark of all great leaders, is they always remain students, don't they? And let's not leave it, Harry. Harry's been with you since early days, right? Oh, yeah,
since the relative beginning. We gave him alone the title of founding advisor because we were so nascent at the time that you know, he really spotted something that we didn't even see in ourselves yet, and pushed us, you know, outside of what we thought would be possible, and then, you know, continued beyond that. And, you know, he had started his own startup and had done some DJ stuff and just a bunch of different creative projects, and podcasting, you know, plays a big part in that with Podcast Junkies. So he has this amazing position within the community as just kind of he knows everybody. And in the beginning, that was critical for us because we had no street cred. We were complete outsiders, but thankfully the podcast community is very open and welcoming. Mm-hmm. So that was just total imposter syndrome in our head. That did not really end up mattering at all. But of course, when you walk into a room with Harry Duran, you know, it's a little bit amplified, and that of course helps. But on a product level, I mean, his fingerprints are all over the place, and he's constantly the voice of his podcast is the tagline is the podcaster's voice. And he really, for our company, is the podcaster's voice, like literally. And, you know, of course we talk to a lot of our customers and things now as well. But in the beginning, that was just Harry, you know, and that's all we could get to listen to and get feedback from. So, just, you know, an amazing human being that I'm grateful to count amongst my friends and lifelong friends, all of our advisors. So we're just incredibly, incredibly grateful that that these people even answer our emails or our phone calls, let alone, you know, are working alongside us to make an awesome product, an awesome company that that just drives podcasting, you know, into the future.
Mm. It sounds like you're doing all of this for all the right reasons. It sounds like a wonderful Cinderella story that I'm convinced is only going to get better. And the principles that you've followed tell me that whatever success you have with this, which I suspect will be huge, you'll be deserving of it, that's for sure. Now, because I know you've got to go and I don't want to hold you up, time is valuable, I'm going to skip some of our questions, but I would love it if we would catch up again sometime in the future, maybe with Rock, maybe with a couple of the other guys, you know, when you have a chance, because you guys are going to be a leading light in this community, that's for sure. So
I'd love that.
I'm going to leave you with this. If you knew you had a decade left to live, Zach, what legacy would you like to leave behind? What would you like your dent in the universe, as Seth Godin calls it, to be?
I want to empower as many people to be as creative as they want to be. And the great thing about creativity is that it's kind of boundless. So I think that, you know, that is a lot of creative potential is being kind of I wouldn't say necessarily lost, but it could be enhanced by collaboration and connecting with other people who have different forms of creativity. And, you know, people talk a lot about diversity within companies and things like that. And diversity of thought is one that I think is kind of underrepresented within that conversation. And, you know, it really enhances creativity. If you have two people from two different worldviews, from two different sides of the planet, but, you know, we can have an intelligent conversation and dialogue on this one topic, who knows where that's going to go, you know? And that creative potential being unlocked really, really excites me as a creative, and to play a any kind of part in that is just a dream come true. So I think that's really, for me, that's what it's about, is empowering new forms of creativity by connecting creatives from anywhere.
That sounds wonderful. It's the ripple effect, isn't it? You can drop a little pebble in a pond and the ripple can continue infinitely as it touches other people, and then they create their own ripple effect, and it all, you know, comes back to what you did, you know, 10 years before.
It's surreal. And, you know, in the best way possible, I'm just that, like I said, that we can play any kind of part in other people's success, in, you know, making their creative work higher quality, go in new directions, exploring new potential, is just really what excites us about Squadcast. And today, you know, we're doing it in audio. Tomorrow we'll be doing it in video, you know, and just new forms of creativity are coming to light just from this solid foundation that we've built by listening to creatives about the tools that they need to be the best version of themselves, and get whatever their creative vision out into the world without sacrificing any quality.
Yep. And to do, as I always like to say, to live and work on their terms. Well, this has been brilliant, Zach. I've loved chatting to you. I could chat to you forever. I really could.
Likewise.
But I've got to let you go. So where can people find out more about you and about your team? And especially, of course, where can they find out more about Squadcast?
Yeah, we're at Squadcast FM on all the socials. We're at squadcast.fm online. Check out the site. We have our podcast, Between Two Mics, where we talk to people in podcasting who are moving the needle forward. In one way or another, we have a bunch of videos and great content that we are very thoughtful about, for, you know, the reasons that I mentioned before. All of those things we bring to life in our content as well. Always striving to have very high quality stuff that's in respect of people's time. And if you are a podcaster or looking to start a podcast, hit us up. We're happy to help with your remote interviews and make sure you sound great no matter where you're at in the world or where your guest is at in the world. I'm on social at Zach_Moreno, and that's Zach with an H. And I hang out on like LinkedIn and on Twitter a little bit, Instagram. So that handle is everywhere. And I don't have a personal website at this point in time, but I think I am about to buy zachin.space for my new website. So that's...
You got to get some of your art up there.
Yeah,
Zach.
Yeah. That's
show us your creative.
That's a really great idea. That's a really great idea. Yeah. Today, a lot of it comes to life with pixels and, you know, functionality and UX and all that stuff.
It's still art.
And I still draw quite a lot. So that is, you know, something that is very near and dear to my heart. So kind of that foundation in creative work. When I work, I'll be transparent. When I'm here working and trying to get stuff done and building, you know, the next version of Squadcast, I always have Bob Ross playing in the background, because for me, that's the creative environment that I got used to with being productive, is hearing those sounds of the brush strokes and, you know, mixing paint and that, those sounds. So, that is something that, you know, has really stuck with me and is part of my creative process. So, you know,
Cool. I'm sure we could talk a lot more about that stuff. I would love to get into all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, let's do it in round two. I'm cool with that.
Yeah, good stuff. All right, Zach, well, I'm going to let you go. This has been an awesome conversation. I can't wait to get this out to everybody. I suspect this will be, this will be out week after next.
Awesome.
So we've got the girls from New Zealand, Ace the Gram are coming out. And, you know, there'll be blog posts, there'll be socials and all that sort of stuff. So I'll give you a good heads up on it before it comes out. I know the audio is going to be awesome, so I don't have to worry about that. And I look forward to talking to you again, mate. You go off and do what you got to do, and you'll hear from me again by email real soon.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Thank you again, Peter.
Good on you, mate. Thanks, mate. Bye-bye.